상계 주통 수기 주난마 장주 말두 달리 겸수지 달리 증성이 미소랑기 별아변지 상계 I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. The virtuous merits that I collect, the practice of giving and the other professions, may attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints. The virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. It is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as the Buddha room, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure land. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratnamandala Buddha Mega Samunda Saparana Samayaya. Okay, welcome. Sakya Pandita's Clarifying the Sage's Intent. So we're working our way through the six perfections, and there is a progression of these perfections, starting with generosity and working through. They sort of build on each other and depend on each other, but also they increase in importance. The fifth perfection, being meditative concentration, of course is very important. It's unthinkable to be a Buddhist without knowing how to meditate and actually practicing meditation. It's just a given, basically. But also because the sixth perfection, which is wisdom, can only be attained through meditation. You can't get it out of just reading a book. And in a simplistic sort of way, wisdom is actually enlightenment. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the accomplishment of the perfection of wisdom in its fullness. So it's really important that the meditation perfection be understood, so that we can practice it correctly and attain our goal of enlightenment for the sake of all beings. We talked about the meditation perfection last week, but it's, as I said, it's an important topic, so I wanted to do an overview or a review, because obviously there are many, many types of meditation, and Sakya Pandita lists some of the different kinds just to give us an idea. But obviously we're not going to go into all of those different kinds of meditation, because this text, Sakya Pandita's text, is a Sutrayana or a perfection vehicle text, a Mahayana text. So he elaborates extensively from that point of view, just mentioning the other types, and so we won't go into the other types, but we will review the Madhyamaka, or the middle way Mahayana tradition of meditation, just so we know what we're talking about here. In terms of the definition of meditative concentration, Sakya Pandita defines it as placing the mind in calmed focus for the sake of attaining complete Buddhahood. And obviously that means Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. There are other ways of defining it. The other definitions usually make reference to an object or a wholesome object or a pure object. That's understood. If you meditate on something. Okay, so your object. So that's the definition according to Sakya Pandita. And then he goes on saying that we need to ascertain the nature of meditative concentration. And the way to do that is to identify the antithesis. The antithesis being distraction. If meditation is concentration, the antithesis is distraction. In order to accomplish meditative concentration, we need to find out and work with the antidotes to distraction. Sakya Pandita identifies a couple of antidotes that we need to understand. One is ridding yourself of attachment to sentient beings and possessions. We are distracted by what? We're distracted by what's in our world. What's in our world? Sentient beings and things, mostly our things. If you meditate and you look at your meditation and what is it that distracts you during meditation, it will probably be one of those two categories of things. We would include our body in our possessions. And we are also sentient beings, of course. We have our world, we have the people and our pets and our sentient beings that are in our world. And we have our things, our possessions. And we have attachment to those things, whether we want to admit it or not. We're attached to our body, we're attached to our beings, our family, our friends, relatives, our pets, those things. And some of us are attached to our possessions. Some of us are very attached to our possessions. I think I told a story one time of somebody that I know whose brother was in his last stages of cancer. He was dying. He was down to his final days, really. He had a prized antique car. This guy was a mechanic, so his whole world was cars. He was concerned about this car. He really liked it. And what was going to happen to his car, and who was going to take it, and would they take care of it? And he was agitating himself, literally on his deathbed, about a car.
Wow.
My friend, who was his brother, who's a Buddhist, went to him and showed compassion to his situation. And he said, you know, to his brother, you know, your nephew, he would love that car. And I'm sure he would take really good care of it. And I think if he had that car, you wouldn't have to worry about your car anymore. And just, sounds simple, but he gave a solution to his brother, who was in this probably confused state, and took away that anxiety, and the nephew got the car, his brother died peacefully, and that was the end of it. So these kind of situations arise in life and death. So we need to identify where our attachments are. If we're going to really accomplish meditation, we need to identify and work with the antidotes. In other words, letting go of our attachment. This chapter by Sakya Pandita on meditation is interesting because, of course, meditation is a huge topic, and it could be approached in many different ways. And in fact, in his text, very often he says, well, I won't go into that, otherwise this text is just going to be too long, you know. And this chapter, there are literally meditation manuals that have been written over the centuries just on this topic. So Sakya Pandita could have really approached it a number of ways. He could have approached it talking about the mechanics of meditation. What are the faults of the meditator? What are the antidotes to the faults? And so on. There are texts that cover that. It's good to know those. The Beautiful Ornament of the Three Visions goes into that in quite a bit of detail. So that's a good reference if anybody wants to review those mechanics, because they're really helpful to understand, well, how do you actually meditate? Sakya Pandita here didn't take that approach. He didn't go into the mechanics at all. he went into the, what I would call the themes of Madhyamaka meditation. What are the topics, what are the objects, and what is the order to do them in so that they build on each other and take us through to an outcome? I think it's good to know that in studying this text and this chapter, because that's the approach that he takes. Going back to the antidotes to distraction, as we said, there's ridding yourself of attachment to sentient beings and possessions. And then the second antidote that he talks about is calling to mind the virtues of solitude. For most of us, it's helpful to have a good environment to meditate in. You know, we as Westerners, we're probably not going to spend the next 3 years in a cave in the Himalayas. But that doesn't mean that we can't carve out our meditator's nest of solitude, whether it be, you know, an hour in a room, or half a day, or a day, or a weekend, or even taking a week, a week's vacation and go do a retreat. Solitude, especially in the beginning, it helps to have physical solitude, to have a place that's not too noisy, not too distracting, there's not sirens and dynamite blasting and things going on that can distract you. As beginner meditators, we need to have some solitude and some quiet to be able to do this or any meditation well. Of course, a master, a great meditating master, they don't have that problem. You know, they have developed the ability of what Geshe Thachi Nyamgyo called closing the five doors. So closing the door of your senses, your eyes, your ears, and so on. And that takes some practice, of course. Eventually, masters can do that. They just shut it down. But most of us need to get to that point. And so solitude, there's a long discussion in the text about the virtues of solitude and the advantages of solitude and having a good meditator's nest, a good place where you can go and have some quiet and do the work. Because it is work. Meditation is work. Geshe Thachi Nyamgyo said that in his monastery, they didn't start teaching meditation to the monks until they were about 21 years old. Because it's work. And so the work of children is play. So the children did other things, but they weren't burdened with learning meditation. But now, when we're in the stage of adulthood, and we really want to accomplish this, we need to roll up our proverbial sleeves, find some solitude, and practice. As I said, Sakyapandita lists many different kinds of meditation, but this particular text is going to focus on Madhyamaka, the Madhyamaka tradition of meditation, which is Mahayana, great vehicle, but it's a particular branch, okay? There's two main branches in Mahayana. There's Yogacara and Madhyamaka. Sakyapandita mentions Yogacara, but he focuses on Madhyamaka. Traditionally, the teaching on Madhyamaka meditation practice begins with loving kindness, what it is and how to focus on it and so on. But Sakyapandita says that he's aware of that tradition, but he felt that there is a practice which really helps the development of loving-kindness, and that is the practice of the Four Immeasurables. We say the Four Immeasurable Prayer every time we say our dedication here. Our prayer reads, "May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss, which is sorrowless, and may all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging." The Four Immeasurables, it's not just a beautiful prayer, it's an important teaching. Sakyapandita goes into some discussion about it in his text here, with the idea that it's helpful for us if we really understand and practice those four measurables, then we can go into the next stage or step of the Madhyamaka meditation, which is loving kindness. Without going into repeating the discussion about the four immeasurables, it's just, I think, worth mentioning is the reason they are immeasurable is because the objects are sentient beings, which are infinite. Being a Mahayana meditation, it's being done for the benefit of all sentient beings. So it keeps us focused on that, because some of the downfalls involve getting caught up in our own afflictions, stories, distractions, motivations, and so on. And having this immeasurable focus of the four immeasurables, all sentient beings, it keeps us on track, so to speak, with our meditation, keeping our motivation where it needs to be. So the four immeasurable meditation is the first stage of the Madhyamaka meditation. The second stage is cultivating loving kindness. All sentient beings have been our mothers, because infinite number of sentient beings, infinite number of rebirths, they've been our mothers, our fathers, our family, our friends, our loved ones, and they have been kind to us in immeasurable ways and times. And so we need to develop our loving kindness back to them, our desire to pay them back, so to speak, by wishing that they be happy. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. Then we move on to the next stage of the meditation, which is compassion. We know that samsara is suffering. The teaching Parting from the Four Attachments taught us that in great detail. Samsara is cyclic, existence is suffering in all kinds of ways. And our dear sentient being mothers are suffering in samsara in the different realms that they may be. And because we have loving kindness towards them and wish them to be happy, seeing them suffering elicits compassion. Compassion being the wish, the desire that they not suffer, to actually take away their suffering. Okay? Tonglen is a practice for doing that. We've had discussions about Tonglen, taking and giving. Compassion is the next stage that's developed in this meditation. We can call it a series or a sequence. Now, you can do the whole sequence when you meditate, or you can just choose one of these topics and focus on that. Have that be your meditation for that session. If you want to cultivate compassion, for example, you can do a compassion session, meditation session. And also there are sadhanas and practices for these topics. Genrezi practice, for example, for compassion. And then, after developing loving kindness and compassion, what arises? Well, I want my dear mothers to be free from suffering, but how can I do that? I don't have the power. I'm not in a position to really do that in any meaningful way. Who does? Well, a Buddha does. The Buddha has the power to free sentient beings by teaching the path. But I'm not a Buddha, so I need to become a Buddha. I need to develop spiritually, to put myself in the position of Buddhahood in order to be able to help sentient beings. Because right now, I'm basically helpless. And even if I try to help, sometimes I end up making it worse. Like, I don't really have the ability or the clairvoyance to even know what to do. Buddha, of course, has all these powers, which we will go into in detail later. So what develops then is the enlightenment thought, the bodhicitta thought, the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings, to free them from suffering. And not only the wish, but I'm going to get to work and do it. I'm going to follow the path, do the practices, develop spiritually, and go through the stages until I arrive at Buddhahood. Cultivating the enlightenment thought is the next stage, and that meditation is broken down into steps to make it easier to do, so to speak. The first step is to develop the meditation on the equality of self and others. Simply put, that means I want to be happy, everybody else wants to be happy. All sentient beings, even animals. And I don't want to suffer. And sentient beings don't want to suffer. Even a one-celled amoeba, if you put it under a microscope and poke it, it'll move away. It's natural to not to want to suffer, and it's natural to want to be happy. I'm like everybody else. Everybody else is like me. We're all in the same proverbial boat. We're all equal. So that's the meditation of the equality self and others. Again, you can include this in a series, or you can focus on that and make that an individual meditation. The next stage or step is exchanging self and others. Now, this is a particular Mahayana practice, which is actually, I think it's quite advanced, actually, to do this practice, to actually exchange self for others. And this is where the Tonglen practice, the taking and giving, comes in. Or I'm going to take away or take on the suffering of others, and I'm going to give my happiness to them. So I'm going to do a switcheroo to what I usually do, which is to think of number one first, right? And I'm going to really make a jump on the spiritual path and make an exchange. Now, all of these practices are mind practices, all the perfections. Some of them have physical aspects to them, like generosity, you give somebody something, but the practice itself is mind. So when we do the practice of exchanging self and others, and we do the practice of visualizing their suffering coming in like black smoke, going down into my heart, destroying my self-cherishing, which is the cause of all my problems. And then I give out all my good things, my merit, all my possessions, my happiness, and all that. Remember, I'm wishing happiness to other beings. This is a meditation. This is mental. In no way whatsoever will I get sick or suffer more or have a problem because I'm doing a practice where I meditate on taking other people's suffering. That's absolutely not going to happen. It's not a problem. But what it will do, if I do this seriously, and Geshe Tashi Namgyal said this is a serious practice, it will change my inner state. It will weaken my self-cherishing, and it will increase my altruism, which is what we want to do, right? The practice of taking and giving, it was originally a secret practice because it's kind of a big jump if you think about it. But nowadays, some of the practice has been revealed, so to speak, or taught, this idea of breathing the black smoke in and breathing the white light out. That's a didactic tool for learning how to do it. It's not about smoke and light. It's about changing our mind. So this type of practice helps to train us in the taking and giving. It trains our mind. Eventually, we want to let go of the smoke and light part of it and just have the natural proclivity or tendency to wish that people wouldn't suffer, and if we can, do something about it, and wish to give them happiness if we can do something about it. There are some aspects of this type of practice that still remain secret. We have an opportunity now to have an insight and a teaching about something that's very special. It's a practice to be taken seriously because it's very transformative. So that's the exchange of self and others step or part in meditation. And then Sakyapandita says there's another section to this discussion, which is called perfecting those two. He says that the way you want to do that is to recite aloud the harmful consequences of working selfishly. To hear, contemplate, and meditate, we're going to actually recite aloud all the reasons that we've been taught about why selfishness is a bad idea. Self-cherishing is really the enemy. It's the number one demon that harasses us, causes us to suffer, and keeps us tied into the cyclic existence. And we need to really get that, because we have this strong tendency towards self-cherishing. It's just, we've done it for so long that we think it's normal. And we need to uproot that, or lessen it anyway. And so he recommends reciting aloud. And then he says the second way is to recall the rightness of exerting yourself for the benefit of others. These two are really saying in another way that self-cherishing is not the way to go, and altruism is. So we want to, again, focus on taking the suffering of others and giving happiness to them. And those final practices are the way to perfect the two practices of equality of self and others and exchanging self and others. That's the sort of outline for the Madhyamaka meditation. And then Sakyapandita has a section called Correctly Accomplishing Meditative Concentration. He says about that, correctly accomplishing meditative concentration includes two things. Accomplishing the four excellent qualities and eliminating the seven attachments. Accomplishing the four excellent qualities are explained in the lines beginning meditative concentration, the destruction of its opposite. Accordingly, these qualities are, number one, discarding the antithesis, which is distraction. Throw it away. Two, realizing the non-discursive, which is the absence of a substantial self. We didn't go into it. Madhyamaka has extensive teachings and meditation on how to disassemble the self to show that it's an illusion logically. Number three is fulfilling others' wishes by accomplishing the benefits of self and others based on meditation. So by developing our ability to meditate, we can benefit others, and by benefiting others, we automatically benefit ourselves. And number four, maturing sentient beings by establishing them in the three vehicles of Buddhism. So those are the four excellent qualities. The seven attachments are, number one, attachment to the antithesis, which is distraction. So being attached to distraction, that in itself is problematic. That attachment has to be eliminated. Number two is procrastination. I'll meditate tomorrow. I'll meditate when I get my vacation. I'll meditate next life. Number three, premature satisfaction. Well, I did 5 minutes. I think that's enough for today. Go watch some Netflix now. You know, come on. Do a little more. So being satisfied with doing very little. You have to be honest with yourself. You know, did you really do the work you needed to do to accomplish what you say you want to accomplish? Number four, the hope of getting something in return. Gee, if I become a really great meditator, I could have a podcast online. I could be on TikTok. I could have lots of followers. I could make lots of money. I could be famous. I could be... No. You do it without any expectation of return, respect, money, whatever. No. Number five, the future result of a deed. That means, well, if I meditate pretty well, I'll have a better rebirth next life. I can go to the God realm and hang out with the gods. And that'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Yeah. No. Number six, the antithesis, that is the latent dispositions to distractions not yet destroyed. So if you have a tendency towards being distracted, you may know somebody that's always kind of distracted. If you have that tendency, if you have that proclivity as part of your makeup, your karmic predicament, you need to identify that and work on that. You need to eliminate that proclivity because it's always going to take you away from where you want to be, which is focused. If you're always zipping around distracted, you're not really accomplishing meditation much. And the seventh one is the two special distractions as explained previously in the chapter on generosity. So that was five chapters ago. So just to remind us, there are two of these, okay? The distraction of attention, which means the tendency to go backwards to a lower path. Mahayana is called the great vehicle. And in the scheme of things, from a Mahayana point of view, there are paths that are what are considered to be lesser. And if you regress to one of those, if you're Mahayana, you shouldn't regress. So that's the distraction of attention. And then the distraction of conceptual thinking of the three factors. So that's thinking that the meditator, the meditation, and the object are all real in the sense of being independent, permanent, and so on and so forth. In other words, thinking that they're not subject to emptiness. That's a distraction, or that's an attachment. It's a type of attachment distraction that we need to eliminate. So that is what Sakyapandita means by correctly accomplishing meditative concentration. Why should we do all this work?
To benefit all sentient beings.
What are the benefits? So now we're going to find out exactly what are the benefits. Mm. This section is called The Benefits of Realizing Meditative Concentration, of which there are two main sorts, temporary and ultimate. Temporary has two sorts, those occurring in the present life and those occurring in future lives. The benefits in this life, according to Sakyapandita, are through the realization of meditative concentration, you will experience the benefit of tranquility, shamatha, shine, calm abiding. That will dispel adventitious afflictions. So when we develop calm abiding, it doesn't totally root out the afflictions, but it really, really reduces them dramatically. Okay, so that's the benefit. The eight worldly concerns, or the four poisonous dichotomies, as I call them, they will be equalized. So, in other words, those concerns that we get concerned about, like happiness, unhappiness, fame, bad reputation, all those things that we're caught up in that we shouldn't be because they're just not worth it, those will be reduced by meditating. It's a way of reducing those. And then another benefit is, according to Sakyapandita, you will attain the joys and bliss of meditative concentrations. As you go through the stages of meditation and develop your meditation, there naturally arises bliss. And as you go through the development, the spiritual development, you go from bliss to bliss. it just gets better. And these are types of joy. Not samsaric joy, though. Good joy. Okay, these are byproducts. It's not like we're aiming for the bliss, but if you do this correctly, you will accomplish it. So that's a benefit that you can get in this life. If you ever see a master who's just like happy, they probably have some experience of bliss. You will attain the joys and bliss of meditative concentration, and to some extent, there will arise excellent qualities such as supernatural powers and supranormal intuition. Again, as your meditation develops and progresses, so does your intuition, your partial clairvoyance, and various supernatural powers come as a byproduct, not as the focus or the goal, but they just come. And as they come, you can use those to benefit others. So, for example, if you have clairvoyance and you have somebody in front of you who's suffering, you can actually know what the suffering is, what's the cause of it, and you can help them. If you don't know that, as we said before, you might try to help them and make it worse. As these supernormal capacities come, they can then be used to benefit beings. Healing is another one. Some of these really spiritual people have healing powers and so forth. So there's a whole host of these benefits that can come, and they can come in this life. And then finally, Sakyapandita says, those meditators who become known to others will become objects of delight for the world of humans and gods. So great meditators become an example for us. You know, they've done it. We can see, oh, it's possible. You know, it provides a stimulus, encouragement for us. Like, oh, it's not hopeless. Somebody did it. I can do it too. Here's the way. Here's the path. Okay, so if you actually get a chance to hang around a real master, you know, a great meditator, I mean, it's evident. You know, they have the vibe. You can feel it, you know. So it's pretty amazing. It can be really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Okay? All that's for this life. For future lives, you will benefit by acquiring a body, voice, and mind that are ready for use in Dharma practice and meditation. So in other words, you'll be reborn. You won't have to work through all of this because you did it this life. You'll be reborn, you'll be ready to go on. You carry the benefit with you because you have the karmic imprints. You will benefit by acquiring the four concentrations. These are four types of dhyani, types of meditation that can be accomplished. Okay. There are also four supernormal intuitions which can be accomplished in future lives. So this intuition can be developed further into different kinds. And then Sakyapandita says, and so forth. So there's more, but we won't go into that now, otherwise the book would be too long. Okay. And then he quotes the scripture which says all of the things that he just said. And then he lists the ultimate benefits. Because of meditative concentration, when you attain Buddhahood, you will attain such things as the four purities by which activities for yourself and others are achieved. So would you like to know what the four purities are? He doesn't list them in the text. He makes the teacher do the homework and look it up, you know. So
yeah,
the four purities are the purity of body or basis. And what that means is you have control over your rebirths, how long you live, and when you leave it and go on. This is something that some beings have already accomplished, so somebody is a reincarnation of somebody or a tolku of somebody, they have control over that. They can choose their parents and where they're born and the type of birth, type of life, and how long they're going to live, and then when they're going to leave it and go on to the next thing. For example, the 41st Sakyatrizin, the Sakyatrichan, it's widely known what his previous birth was. And he was a famous Nyingma treasure discoverer who said before he passed away, in my next life, I'm going to go help the Sakyas. So that's an example of somebody who has that ability to control their rebirth and so on. So that's the first purity, the purity of body. The second purity is the purity of object. And that refers to the ability to do miracles. And so, for example, manifesting non-existent things, poof, or disappearing existing things, poof. So that's one of the powers that Buddhas have, and the sutras are full of stories of them doing that. The third one is the purity of enlightened thought, which refers to dominion over all states of meditative absorption. So there's many, many types of meditations or meditative states, meditative absorptions. Again, the sutras are full of stories or examples of Shakyamuni Buddha. It'll say, well, the Buddha went into the absorption of so-and-so. They all have names. And did so-and-so, or, you know, he called all the bodhisattvas from the faraway universe to come for teaching or something like that. The attainment of Buddhahood grants you, so to speak, the purity of enlightened thought, which is dominion over all of these different states of meditation. And then the fourth one is the purity of transcendental wisdom, and that is severing the continuum of ignorance. So we as sentient beings, we're sentient beings because we're ignorant. What are we ignorant of? The true nature of reality, basically. And we have this continuum, so to speak, of birth, rebirth, cyclic existence going around and around and around, being propelled by ignorance, basically. And that's what keeps us in this suffering state. A being who attains Buddhahood, Sakyapandita uses the word severs it, and that's used in different texts by teachers of cutting the root of ignorance, this self-cherishing, this misperception of the nature of reality of self and others and phenomena and so on. The first five perfections tamp it down. They subdue our afflictions, but they don't sever them. It's the wisdom, which is coming, which we develop through meditation, that actually cuts that root completely and therefore frees us from this terrible circle of cyclic existence. And the Buddha is completely out of that. He's free from karma, death, rebirth, and so on. He has complete bliss, and he has the ability to then go and help other beings do the same thing that he did. So that's how the Buddha helps sentient beings, and that's how he's able to help sentient beings, because he's severed that root. He has the clarity, so to speak. And in fact, it's said that sentient beings have minds, but Buddhas have wisdom. So a lot of teachers make this distinction and say, well, you really shouldn't talk about the Buddha's mind, because that implies the kind of thing that we have. The Buddhas are out of that completely. They have wisdom, all the different kinds of wisdom. We just say wisdom as a category, but there's different kinds. Okay. So that is the fourth purity, the purity of transcendental wisdom. And we're going into the chapter on wisdom very soon.
Okay.
So that is a review It's not the whole chapter, but it's an overview of the chapter on meditative concentration, the fifth perfection.
Thank you.
Any questions about that? Perfectly clear. Okay. Well, rather than opening up a whole new chapter, I would like to... Let's just take a few minutes and meditate on all this. We've been talking about meditation. So let me get the bell here. I'll leave this board here if you want to either do the whole thing or pick out one of these topics to meditate on. We'll just do a short meditation here. So I'll leave it up to you. How do you want to? we'll say there are dedication. So non de don jose pani do non ebe danum don jete ke gana ji bavum du be se be tore do adu arsho jang Zen Jo Rinpoche Ma Ge Ba Nam Ge Gyurche Ge Ma Nyam Par Me Par Yong Gong Ne Gong Tu Per Par Sho Jam Pa Pa O Ji Ta Ken Pa Dong Kuntu Sangpo Deyang Dijin Te Deda Kungi Jezu Da Lo Che Ye Wa Di Da Tam Che Ra Tu Ngo Tu Sung Ye Bi Gya Wa Tam Che Ki No wa gang wa chu tu na pa gi Da jin ge we tsa wa di kun kyang Sang po chu ji ram tu ngo ar gi Sa wa dang jo jin sha pa Jesu Yi Rang Gu Jing So Wa Yi Ge Wa Chung Ze Da Gi Ji Zag Pa Tam Je Zo Pe Jang Chu Chi By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.